Hey, craft beer fans, Daryl here, with a special announcement before we start today's episode. We are proud to announce that Tagabrew USA has become the presenting sponsor of the Brewsline Roadshow. If you're a hop explorer like me, you're going to love Tagabrew, simply the nation's largest brewery trail. So check out Tagabrew at tagabrew.com or on social media at Tagabrew USA and download our free mobile app to see our over 600 participating breweries nationwide. I can't wait to see you on the trail soon. Now let's jump into our next episode of the Brewsline Roadshow.
And I'm drinking well, you know that you're my friend, and I'll say, I think I'll have myself a beer.
Welcome back to the Brewsline Roadshow. I'm your host, Daryl, and today we're in the city of the Hockey Ice Hogs and the Baseball Rivets and these guys.
I want you to want me.
That's right, Screw City, Forest City, Rockford, Illinois, and visiting with Chris Langeth of Pig Mines Brewery just outside of Rockford.
Today we're in beautiful McChesney Park, is it?
McChesney Park,
McChesney,
yep.
Park, Illinois, just a little bit outside of Rockford. We're with Chris Langeth at Pig Mines Brewing today. Say hello, Chris.
Yeah, hey there. Thanks for coming out, Daryl.
My pleasure. We originally from this area, went to school out here, so it's kind of a little bit of a homecoming.
Sure.
How did you get started in brewing, and how'd you find your way here to Pig's? I'm going to keep saying Pig's Mine instead of Pig Mines.
That's fair. It's a bit of a long story. I took a kind of roundabout way of getting into the craft brewing industry. I came up around homebrewers when I was a kid. Some of my parents' friends would all get together and put together homebrews and stuff when I was maybe 11 years old. And so I never, I was given a taste of craft beer here and there when I was younger. Probably had my first IPA when I was 13, my full beer. I think that was my 13th birthday. It was the first time I was allowed to drink a full beer. So that was fun. In a very, responsible way. Parents were cool about it. But, so I'd always had kind of like a passion for the craft beverage industry for a long time. I'm 32 now, so that was, 20 years ago. Craft breweries were few and far between, so it was kind of the way, if you wanted to make an IPA, you wanted to have one, you had to brew your own, sort of. I went to the University of Virginia and studied biology. I did a brief stint doing research as an undergrad in synthetic biology. Had some work published, and I got to present at MIT and do all this cool stuff. We actually submitted a proposal for a little thing called CRISPR. That was probably 2012 we did that. And I had an advisor go, he's like, CRISPR's never going to take off. That's nothing. And now, of course, it's, a billion-dollar industry. Had we actually gotten approval for that initial project proposal, my career probably would have taken a different direction. It wasn't for me. I didn't want to pursue research, so I joined the Peace Corps. I did a little over 2 years in East Africa. I worked in as an agricultural extension agent in Tanzania for 2 years. I was assigned to a rural community of about 2,500 people. No one knew how to speak English.
That's an experience.
So I learned how to speak Swahili, and that was pretty cool. I entered the Peace Corps thinking I'd come back after 2 years and I'd go to grad school and I'd kind of figure out what I wanted to do, whether I'd want to pursue biology again or go into public health or take whatever route. I thought I'd have 2 years to kind of figure out what I wanted to do. But I'd call back home, and my kind of joke became that I missed craft beer sometimes more than I miss my family. So people would come and visit or send a care package and be like, can you send some Bell's Two Hearted or something, I just need something other than these the South African brewing beer. And there's no refrigeration over there or anything, so I'm drinking these warm macro lagers and so that was hell. While I was over in the Peace Corps, I met my wife. She's from the Madison area, Madison, Wisconsin. And so after 2.5 years there, we moved back, and I ended up moving to Madison. I did a brief stint, another 6 months working kind of in agriculture again. I was a farm inspector for a small organization and inspecting organic farms. After that was up, I was kind of faced with, all right, well, you know, she went to, she applied, she wanted to be a physician assistant, so she applied for schools back in Virginia, where I'm from. So we were getting ready, gearing up to move back to Eastern Virginia. I was considering applying to grad school there and looking at some public health programs and this and that. And then I was like, you know what? I'd really like to do. I'd like to make beer for a living. And that was kind of a realization, you know, again, I'd had while I was in Tanzania. And so I applied to the American Brewers Guild in Vermont. It's a correspondence program of about 6 months. And, but what attracted me to the American Brewers Guild program is that it's, again, a six-month correspondence program. They have guest lecturers from the industry, some really, you know, well-known fellows, Matt Brindleton from Firestone Walker, Garrett Oliver from Brooklyn Brewery, among others. So, you know, we had a great
some good heavy hitters
there. And a lot of people to learn from. But what I really liked then is that at the very end of that, you spend a week in Vermont doing your first kind of hands-on. It was my first hands-on commercial brew that I'd been able to do. But while I was in that program, I was also fortunate enough to land my first job at Commonwealth Brewing in Virginia Beach. So I spent about 3 years there. And then my wife finished school, and we were looking to where to go. She was fortunate enough to get this big scholarship that pays for the majority of her schooling.
That's cool.
About $200,000 to work in an underserved area or clinic. So that's how we ended up in Rockford. She works at a community walk-in clinic here. So we're about an hour from Madison, close to her family. And I kind of threw my resume out there. And at the time, it just lined up very serendipitously. Pigmines was looking to hire a new head brewer, and I was looking to kind of take the next step in making this a full career. So here
well, you know, I have to ask this question. I'm sure everyone probably walks in the door asks this question. Pigmines, where'd that name come from?
Pigmines, yeah. Everyone asks that, and it's a good question. It's a funny story. So the owner and his wife, his then-girlfriend, he was an art student at University of Wisconsin, and they had been dating, and he was taking these life drawing classes, you know, doing nude models, painting nude models. And so he's in his dorm room, I guess, kind of putting the finishing touches on this life drawing painting of this nude model. And she walks in his dorm and sees him painting this, and she goes, "Is this what you're going to be doing?" She goes, "You've got a pig mind." And that was kind of the first time he had heard. She's from the Rockford area, and, but had been going to school in Wisconsin as well. And this was kind of the first time he'd heard an expression like that. Thought it was so funny. It stuck. So that was, I don't know, now about, I guess, 20, 30 years ago. He opened his first business. He's a graphic designer by trade. Opened a print shop. And so that was the name of their first business was Pigmines Creative.
So it just kept, it just stayed with
and
him.
And it just stuck. And they were looking, you know, trying to think of clever names whenever they wanted to open this brewery. And it just Pigmines seemed like the obvious choice.
Yeah, and like I said, it's kind of interesting, though, that the logo's a pig and we're in a vegan brewery.
Right?
Talk a little bit about that.
Yeah. We are proudly America's first vegan brew pub. People often ask what that sort of means. You know, the great majority of craft beer or just beer in general is vegan. But, of course, there are certain process aids we abstain from using, like you know, icing glass or something that's ground up fish bladders or other animal products that are sometimes used for clarification or stabilizing beer or this or that. Of course, lactose we don't use. That's all derived from milk or animal sources. So we just abstain from using those things. It really doesn't constrain me as a brewer. My sort of, they might have a different story, but my sort of understanding was that, you know, here we are in McChesney Park in northern Illinois. It's kind of a blue-collar area. We're in an industrial park here, surrounded by a bunch of machine shops and manufacturers and everything. Rockford is kind of affectionately known as Screw City. It's a big manufacturing town. But the owner and his wife, again, have been vegan for about 30 years. It was a choice they made, you know, when they were young adults and for various reasons, you know. But I think it was a dream of theirs to open a vegan restaurant. But again, doing that in a blue-collar area is a tough sell a little bit. So I think the idea was to partner that with a brew pub or with a brewery And so you get craft beer, you get people in the door, and then, you know, they get their foot in the door and, all right, well, hey, try some vegan food.
Right. And when we walked in here, they were starting to get some things ready for lunch. It smells great. Talk a little bit more about the community, about the Rockford area, McChesney Park, and just describe that for folks who might not have been here.
So Rockford, again, we're north central Illinois here. Rockford's a town of about, I want to say about greater Rockford area is almost 250,000. Rock River runs right through it. It's a gorgeous river. We're known as Screw City, but we're also affectionately known as Forest City. We have just a huge density of forest preserves in the area that the Winnebago County administers. So it's just a gorgeous city. It does get a bad rap. I mean, it's notoriously has a superbly high crime rate per capita. There's a lot of violent crime. There's a lot of poverty. And again, that's why my wife, why we moved to this area is for her career to work in this clinic and in an underserved community. So, you know, it gets a bit of a bad rap. But that being said, I've lived all over the world. Again, I lived, you know, I'm from Pennsylvania. I've lived in Virginia for half of my life. I've lived in Madison, Wisconsin. I lived in East Africa for 2 years. And we love Rockford. We absolutely love it here. We moved here thinking she has this 2-year commitment, but now we're here in our 4th year in Rockford. We just bought a house about a year and a half ago. I mean, we're settled down in this area. We love it here. And it's just it's a friendly people around here. I mean, it's a great community. It has this, you know, it's a big enough city that there's always something to do. And if there isn't, we're an hour from Chicago, Madison, Milwaukee, an hour from each of those places. So, you know, go see some live music or do something like that. But there's always something to do here in Rockford. And what I consistently tell people, too, is that I love that I can go down to Mary's Place downtown or go to the Olympic Tavern or go to any other brewery or something. You know, just go out and inevitably run into someone I know. You know, it's just...
Yeah, we ran into a friend of yours, actually. We were over at Urban Forest on Friday, so Alex says hi, by the way.
Yeah, great. Hey, Alex.
Yeah, I think that's one of the charms of the industry, right?
Yeah.
It's not just the beer, it's the people who come in, and you know, our slogan is connecting good people to good beer, and that's really what it's about. So you came in as head brewer, and I don't know if you had a whole team here or you built a team, but what are some of the skills, qualities of the people that you look for, and I guess in the entire establishment, what kind of people do they bring on the team here?
Honestly, I just look for someone I'm going to be able to get along with. You know, I ask them, you know, what kind of music they listen to. You know, we it's a loud setting here in a production environment, and so you got to be able to play some loud music to kind of drown it out. So we listen to some metal here and there, and some stoner metal and some heavy rock and stuff like that. And you know, I want to make sure. I never listened to metal, actually, before I got into this industry. I was kind of like an indie kid, listened to a lot of alternative. And then, but yeah, mostly I'm just like, when I sit down and interview someone, I'm gauging whether or not we're going to be able to get a
personality.
I can teach you the skills, you know, if you're a capable person, capable of learning and being able to just put in the work, I can teach someone what they need to know. So it really just comes down to, you know, am I going to enjoy spending the majority of my time in close proximity with this guy. I mean, we're a larger brewery, but it's still a tight space down there. You know, you're on top of each other a lot. So
paint a picture for our listeners. What can they expect when they walk into Pig Mines Brewing?
What can you expect? Well, you know, so we opened up this 8,000 square foot expansion over here. We've had our original brew pub open since 2012. And as much as we've tried to make this expansion a welcoming, like, cool environment, it's big. It's a big pole barn. We've got, 20-foot ceilings in here or something? I have no idea. I'm a bad estimate of height. But, I mean, people always still just out human nature, just of patterns and just what they're accustomed to. Like, everyone still likes to hunker down and sit in the original pub side, and they just like to get cozy over there. What you can expect, I mean, we run a full vegan restaurant. We've got a gigantic menu full of appetizers, tacos, burgers. I mean, you name it. You know, yes, we're vegan, but we've got every food imaginable. I mean, a full menu. You'd think you're walking into the Cheesecake Factory or something. We have, on the pub side, we have 10 draft lines, plus a little kegerator. We throw some special beers in there. In the expansion, we have 16 draft lines. you can expect a full array of beers. I like to brew, again, because we're a vegan spot, I like to try and offer a full array. We don't just focus on IPAs or just lagers or just stouts or just sours. We do all of those styles, and I think we do them exceptionally well. But we, you know, there's, whether you're a craft beer drinker or not, I think you can find something here that'll appeal to you.
And you guys do some live entertainment as well?
We do, yeah, of course. Every Saturday throughout the summer, we have live music. Every other Tuesday, we have a group come in. They're called the Grand Ole Opry. They're sort of a self-styled open mic group. It's a lot of the same regulars, and they have like kind of a list of people they go through every week. But anyone's, you know, welcome to join in, and then kind of at the end of the session, they all get together and play some familiar tunes. You know, it's kind of some folk music and stuff like that. So every other Tuesday they do that. Every Thursday we do trivia in the expansion side. We do some music bingo. We've of course got a number of events throughout the year, Oktoberfest, our anniversary party. We do one of my favorites is this Black Wednesday event we do. It's the Wednesday or the night before Thanksgiving. We do a big barrel aged stout release, and that's always a big party.
That's a pretty big party night in general.
Yeah, we bring in some heavier bands, you know, and kind of rock out here. So it's a good
time. And you have a nice outdoor space and
stage. We've got two patios. There's one up front, and then in the expansion, we've got this big patio. We've put in a big kind of shipping container. We've put up on the and elevated it and put a stage out there and a little patio and everything. So in the summer when the weather's nice, we put our bands out there. It's a good time. People bring their pets, and you know, they can't bring them inside because of the health code, but in the summer when it's nice, I mean, there's 20, 30 dogs sitting out there. And it's a
cool.
Good time.
That's cool. Let's talk a little bit more about your approach to brewing and what are some of the different ingredients, techniques that you use that might be a little different.
So when I came up in the industry, I started brewing at Commonwealth Brewing again in Virginia Beach. They've been open now. I don't know. They opened 2016, but they were sort of one of the first or premier like Mid-Atlantic breweries brewing New England style hazy IPAs. Of course, that gets tied up with a lot of, you know, there's some old heads in the industry that kind of lament that style and were very against it. You know, the common refrain is, well, it's just the same beer brewed over with different hops. You know, it's not Citra Mosaic, it's Mosaic Citra this time. But we also I learned there, you know, kind of ways to, you know, you learn traditional beer styles and you learn your BJCP guidelines and you learn all those rules and you respect them, but then also you learn how to break them too. You know, to me, brewing's a lot about innovation. You know, respect the craft, respect tradition, respect, you know, if you're going to brew a German Pilsner or a Hefeweizen or something, brew it true to style. And you have those beers on tap, but then you do a couple things where you're having fun and playing with ingredients and bending the rules a little bit. And so I've kind of carried that philosophy here too. I mean, I take a lot of pride in, I mean, some of my favorite beers to brew, like what we're drinking right now, this American Lager. Brewed it with some flaked corn, but, you know, if I'm brewing a German Pilsner, I'll bring in a bunch of imported Weyermann malts. You know, some floor malted Pilsner malt, brew it with some German noble hops and German yeast and everything, and I'll triple decoct it, or at least do a step mash. But at the same time, you know, we're a vegan spot, and so I try and double down on that identity, and we do a lot of fruited sours, you know, these big overfruited, almost pastry sour type things. That, I mean, they're kind of a loss leader, all the fruit that goes into them. It's like excuse the analogy because it's not vegan, but it's kind of like our Costco rotisserie chicken. It's our loss leader, you know. We're not making our gigantic margins on it, but it's a beer that, again, for people that otherwise aren't craft beer drinkers, really excites people. So we do a full array of things. We do big adjuncted pastry stout, you know, barrel-aged stouts, and all that sort of thing. So, yeah, what? I became a brewer because I love all styles indiscriminately. So,
is there any beer that you've brewed here that you're most proud of?
Oh boy, it was funny. We were pouring at this festival yesterday, and this is maybe a little sacrilege, but this kid comes up and he goes, "Pour me your favorite beer." And we had three beers on tap, and I knew that this would kind of work, but I just poured him equal portions of all three beer mixed together, and I go, "I can't choose. I don't have a favorite, man. I love them all." Of course, there are some I like more than others. I mean, I love brewing a German Pilsner, a good lager. A beer I'm super proud of that is not released yet. We're doing our first I'll kind of tease this. For our anniversary in May, we're planning to release our first ever mixed fermentation beer here at Pig Minds. So I sourced some. This is a just a fun kind of mishmash. You know, just kind of falls under the umbrella of mixed fermentation. There's, you know, I'm not trying to brew a goose or a lambic or do all kind of super traditional anything there, but source some Sauvignon Blanc barrels and brewed this Imperial golden ale, or, well, we lagered it, but then we put it in barrels at room temp, and then hit that with some Brettanomyces and some other sort of bugs that we foraged and kind of propagated here locally at the brewery, and you know, blended with some commercial pitches, and then we've let that hang out in those Sauvignon Blanc barrels for about a year. Started tasting real nice and funky with that Brett and some of the lactobacillus and pedococcus and everything going on in there. Of course, and when we, the primary fermentation we did with Pastorianus and everything. So it's just tasting really nice. And then it got coupled with this idea that our Brian Endel, the brewery owner, had of this sort of childhood story of these neighbors he had, Mabel and Molly. One was kind of sweet and let them pick their blackberries from her yard and eat them, and the other was kind of mean and nasty. And so the idea was we were going to release two of these beers, one that came out of these barrels and didn't get hit with the Brettanomyces and was supposed to be sort of a clean clean barrel aged, you know, imperial golden lager sort of thing, and then the other we were going to hit with the Brettanomyces and add some fruit and give it some funk. But as I started, you know, we put the fruit on there about 2 months ago, and it's just, everything's coming together so well. It's got just a ton of complexity. You get those sort of barnyard, funky, blue, cheesy Brett characteristics, and then you get this bright acidity from the lactobacillus and the blackberries and everything. And so I think we're going to call it Mabel and Molly. It's all going to be one beer because you've got all of those characteristics just in that beer. I'm so excited for this beer. I can't wait.
So you mentioned earlier, before we started, that you guys are about 50-50 with distribution and serving from the tap room. How do you balance that quality and quantity and keeping up with that?
Yeah, I mean, that was probably my biggest challenge coming in here. I'd come from a big production facility before. At Commonwealth, I started there. We were doing about maybe 2,000 barrels a year. And when I left, they were just shy of hitting about 8,000 barrels a year. So I'd seen that kind of growth, I was just a shift brewer there, but I, you know, kind of started kind of delving into what it takes to plan a production schedule and do Gantt charts and that sort of thing. So yeah, it's difficult. Again, when I came on here, we had just completed this 8,000 square foot expansion. They were going from a 7-barrel system, where they were still doing, I mean, basically production brewing about 1,200 barrels a year, I believe. And so now we've got the luxury of time and space where I've got a 3-vessel, 15-barrel brew house. We rarely have to do double brews. We do occasionally, and those are, I mean, fun but tedious and long days. We've almost quintupled our production capacity where we're at. We have a production capacity of about 4,500 barrels a year. I think we're currently producing, this past year we just did shy of 1,700 barrels. So we've, you know, we're barely at half capacity. So, which is, you know, we want to continue to grow, but it's also nice to have the luxury of time and space and availability and not a very strict production schedule. But it becomes challenging to balance, you know, I have 16 taps here, but I'm only probably distributing, you know, at any given time, 4 to 6 core beers. So there, you know, we still use that 7-barrel system where we brew some fun beers just for the tap room to keep things, you know, bring people in here, just, you know, there's some brewery exclusive beers that we do that are fun. A Belgian dark strong ale that we do. Some of the sours that we do are in-house only and not distributed. So yeah, of that 1,700 barrels a year we do, again, about half of that goes out of the tap room itself, which is great. I mean, that's a, you know, we make all our margins here in the tap room.
Most money is in the pipe.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So we make our biggest margins there. So that's why we've really tried to make it a fun event space and get people in the door. And used to be initially people came because we were a brewery, right? That was the whole idea at the beginning, was we're a brewery to get people in the door. But now we're almost known more for our vegan identity, and we have all these weekenders come in from Chicago, Madison, Milwaukee.
So when people are out and about, what are the core beers that they should expect to see out in distribution?
Well, our number one beer, if you've heard of Pig Mines, the one beer you've heard of is our Vanilla Bitch Slap. And
because you won't forget the name.
You won't forget the name. It's an unforgettable name, and there's a story there. The original head brewer, Carson Souza, who's now at Obscurity Brewing in Elgin, Illinois, had spent some time, I believe he's a sort of a Chicagoland native, but had spent some time. He was in Berklee School of Music in Boston, and so he lived on the notorious south side of Boston for a while, and him and his buddies, I guess what the story goes, they'd go out drinking, and, you know, on the south side, your buddy'd get out of line, so you give him a bitch slap and say, get yourself in line, man. And so it kind of just, they shorthanded that, it became the Southie Bitch Slap, you know. So that's that was our first beer, or, you know, our sort of first flagship beer is this American Red Ale. And won't get into the details of sort of how the vanilla, I think, came to be. I think there was, you know, some issues with maybe some diacetyl or something they were trying to cover up. Hush, hush. But so they added some vanilla to it, you know, to kind of complement that buttery note. But it just stuck. I mean, and the other thing is, too, I'll say Carlisle Brewing here in Rockford, they're one of the OGs. He's been around for 18 years. And one of their flagship beers was this vanilla cream ale. And Carson, I think, had kind of cut his teeth there initially. And so that's kind of my refrain now, too. I mean, if you're a brewery in Rockford, you've got a vanilla beer in one form or another. You've got a vanilla cream ale or vanilla red ale. That's Don Carlisle's legacy, is you got to have some fucking vanilla in one of your beers if you're a brewery in Rockford. So vanilla red ale, I mean, it's a unique unique style. Not many, you know, there's vanilla porters, there's vanilla this and that, but vanilla red ale, there's not many of them. So it's a style that's kind of stuck, and that coupled with the name has made it a really unique beer. It's our, I mean, that's what pays the bills around here.
Cool.
Aside from that, we do have our Southie Bitch Slap, of course, the red ale. We do Blue Collar, which we've reformulated as an American lager. We have our Cloudy series. It's a numbered series, an iterative series of New England hazy IPAs. So we're up to Cloudy number 27 now. Each one is a different malt bill, different, like I was kind of joking earlier, is, you know, we switch up the hops there, but we really do design it with purpose in mind. We've got two West Coast IPAs, Sweep the Leg and Death Grip. And we've got a fruited series, another sort of iterative series called Punch Patch. We only do four of those, though, in rotation. So those are fruited sours with different fruits each time. And that kind of runs the gamut of it.
Yeah, quite a range. So, obviously, the expansion's pretty new. What else is in the future for Pig Mines Brewing?
What is on the horizon? Well, we just started self-distributing into Wisconsin. We've been open for 12 years, and we just hired our first ever sales rep. He's a pretty enigmatic character. He's lived in Taiwan for the last 25 years, but he's a Rockford native and just moved back to the area. He was introduced sort of through a friend of a friend. Someone asked him, you know, what can we do to get you back in the Rockford area? And he's like, well, if I could sell beer, I think that's what I would do. And he's got kind of an interesting story. He had opened one of the sort of the first craft beer bars in Taiwan when he was over there. You know, it was hard to get anything outside of Heineken or some of these macro imported beers or some of the other things brewed locally. And he was able to get in touch with some distributors and get some craft beers on, some of the first in his area in Taiwan. And so he's had a passion for the community. So yeah, anyways, we're just really excited to try and continue to meet our production capacity and expand some more. So we've got some great distributors locally that we've partnered with, again, in the Rockford area and Chicagoland. But as the market gets more competitive, it's hard to just organically expand in those markets in the good graces of your distributors alone. And so we've got Dan on board to try and help us grow there and then, of course, get us across the state line. I mean, we're here just 12 miles from Wisconsin, so it makes sense that we just jump across the state line.
Absolutely. It's a why not take that more of that market?
But yeah, I mean, some of the other thing is, you know, just to touch back on you know, what we do to partner with the community is, I think we've been so focused in the last 3 years on just growing growing our distribution footprint and growing the expansion and just working on our staffing and growing the brewery that we've kind of lost focus of being the strong community partner that we wanted to be. And so I think that's kind of our goal for 2024 is to kind of double down on that approach and become more of a community partner.
Well, as we wrap up, let's talk a little bit about the beer we're trying today. I know you mentioned it a couple times, but give us a breakdown on it.
Yeah, so this is our Blue Collar. This was originally just a blonde ale, a simple blonde ale, that kind of became the base for one of our most popular seasonal summer beers, which is Happy Days, which is a blueberry blonde ale. So we brew this blonde ale base, and we keg some of it off or can some of it for our Blue Collar beer. Just meant to be an easy drinking blonde ale.
And it is.
A little fruity, you know, from the ale yeast and everything. And then we would hit the rest with a blueberry extract. It's fun, though, when we serve it in-house. It's just made with a blueberry extract, all natural extract, but an extract nonetheless. But what's really fun about that beer is then we serve it with, you know, kind of a handful of, you know, eight or ten blueberries that go in the pint glass. And it's cool because the carbonation nucleates on those blueberries, and they, as you drink it, they kind of float up and down in the glass. They rise to the top, and they sink back down. It's like a little lava lamp with blueberries. So that's one of our most fun beers. But
I think we have to come back in the summer.
I think you're going to have... Well, we just actually brewed it last week, so it'll be out here probably beginning of March. I mean, people will sell through that 15 barrels in probably 2 or 3 weeks just in-house. People love that beer. But, you know, again, like I said, I just have a love for crafting just traditional lagers. And so we, you know, we've done some German Pilsners and a Czech lager, pale Czech lager. I do a Vienna lager. Of course, Oktoberfest is a big one. I just love the time and dedication and the patience it takes to, you know, from brew day to 6 to 8 weeks later after we've lagered this beer patiently to finally getting your first pint right off the tank is just the most glory. Like, that is the best moment for me as a brewer. So that, you know, when you guys came in today, I wanted to pour you some of this straight off the tank. So we've taken that Blue Collar and we've reformulated it as an American lager. We've brought the ABV down from about 5.86% to 4.2% here is what we're drinking now. And it's no secret. I mean, it's an open secret, I guess, among us brewers. Miller High Life is something we just adore and we love, and we will just unabashedly crush some High Life. And so this is my best attempt at kind of a High Life clone. It's a brewed with all, you know, North American two-row barley and then a decent percentage, about 18-20% flaked maize. So it's a, you know, if you're brewing an American adjunct lager, you go either corn or rice. And I said, you know, well, to hell with those AB guys.
It's got to be
corn, you know. It's got to be corn. So 4.2%, but with that corn, you've got a little bit of sweetness, a little bit of body. This is the second time ever we've actually used our plate and frame filter. So this is actually filtered down to about 5 microns. So that's, you've just got this crystal clear beer. It's just easy drinking and delicious. So,
well, just a quick fact. I grew up in the Chicago area, so you probably would guess I drank a lot of old style.
Oh, you know what?
Until I got to DeKalb. DeKalb, Illinois, which is about an hour from, maybe a little less than that from here, where I went to school, and it was pretty commonplace to see me and my buddies with a flat of Miller High Life walking around. Yep. So this is definitely pays homage to that for sure.
Yeah, well, cheers.
Cheers.
Yeah, it's funny you say, just to touch on that old style, it's funny you say old style. I was recently interviewed for this Vine Pair article, you know, what's the most underrated beer? And so I gave this, you know, almost pretentious answer about you know, American wild ales and mixed fermentation beers and everything. And so, I kind of unpacked the style and what I love about it and all the nuance and everything there. And then at the end of the interview, I go, so anyways, you know, just to kind of not as to sound so pretentious, I go, so anyways, all of that, but also, you know, Heelman's old style, you know, as a Midwest transplant, I just... God, I love old style now, too.
Yeah, used to be a sign on every corner.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah, you just got such a unique brand identity there. Just really a lot of nostalgia, I'm sure. So.
Well, Chris, thank you so much for taking some time.
Yeah, thanks for coming out to visit us.
Pig Mines, learning about that every beer in Rockford has vanilla in it, or at least one of them does.
At least one, yeah.
And we'll be back for sure. So
yeah, please come and see us again. Cheers.